Welcome to the Creative Condition Podcast, an ongoing series of conversations and considerations to help people understand and embrace their own unique creativity for fulfilling lives and brilliant careers. My name is Ben Tallon. I'm an illustrator and author, and I bring 16 years of creative industry experience working with the New York Times, The Guardian, the Premier League, and more. And I invite designers, artists, psychologists, scientists, coaches, athletes, sensitivity experts, and all kinds of thought leaders to help us broaden our knowledge of creativity. Creativity is a fundamental pillar of human happiness, a vital ingredient in the solutions to our problems, but so often misunderstood. The show is supported by founding sponsor and B Corp, Illustration X. Take a look at their stunning range of illustrators and animators at illustrationx.com. If you like the music for the show, it's by Dirty Freud, who you can listen to now on Spotify and all good music streaming services. Today I'm going to walk you through publishing an independent book, because that is what I've just done. The Creative Condition is out today. I didn't want to sit here and have an ego wank. Nah, I wanted to let you in on something useful. I could have done that. I could have just read you a chapter. I could have just talked about how it feels and how I'm proud and all that stuff and thanked a few people. But I'm about feeding the cause of helping people to understand and embrace their creativity. So I want to tell you my experience of publishing an independent book, start to finish, and I hope it's going to be of some use. This is The Creative Condition. How are you doing, guys? I hope you are well. This is The Creative Condition. I am your host, Ben Tallon. Well, it's book day. I feel all right. I feel somewhere in the middle. This is what's weird about building up to a long-term project. And I have a friend here in Salisbury on the dog walk who is a video game artist. He illustrates and creates all the visuals for independent video games that go out on Xbox and PlayStation and all that stuff. And he's awesome. But do you know, it's hilarious. Whenever we spent the last 2.5 years walking our dogs on the same circuit, and he will go through the ringer, something chronic. I'll meet him one day, flying. They've got the trailer done or something like that, or he's cracked a coding problem or whatever it might be. Speaking very uneducatedly here. But then I'll see him and he's like, oh, I just want it done. I'm so burned out. And it's such an arduous process. I mean, you know, we are talking 2.5-3 years of a project to get a video game done and get it out and the rest. Now, this is his second major one of a series. And I get it completely. When it's out, there's a part of you that just goes, thank God for that. Never look at me again. I'm going for a rest and a lie down, rather than this big kind of celebratory whoop whoop thing going on, because you put so much into that process that it really takes a physical and mental toll on you, and you have to really manage yourself throughout that process. That's certainly what I'm finding now with this independent publishing of a book. So what I thought would be nice today, as The Creative Condition is published, it is available now at bentallonwriter.com/shop. It's also going to be on Amazon. Maybe it already is. I haven't checked this morning, but I've been having some trouble getting my packages accepted at the fulfillment center. I'm still waiting to find out why. So apologies if you're an Amazon shopper, but you can get it very reliably and then directly from me at bentallonwriter.com/shop. Or if you're an ebook reader, you can get it now on Kindle. It's out there. I'm very proud of this as a body of work because it's aligned with where I am as a person today. I've been banging this drum for a long time now, studying creativity, because it is still so underappreciated and so underutilized in our society when we have myriad, you know, problems that affect us all in the world today. We're going to need creativity to survive automation with the rise of AI. We're going to need rampant creativity to crack the climate crisis, because let's face it, the authorities ain't doing that. So as peoples, we're going to have to find ways around legislation and the likes that isn't helping the cause. So I thought, well, what a cause to dedicate myself to. And that's what I did somewhere around maybe a couple of years ago. I've been doing this work for a decade on this book, and much longer than that in my lifetime. But in terms of an absolute focus on elevating and helping people to understand creativity on a broader societal level, I arrived at that conclusion maybe even a year ago, when I had a personal law that I've spoken about often. I spoke about on the last episode. I was very down on the climate crisis. I was in a real rut where I wasn't productive. I was You know, I don't know if I was ever quite depressed, but I was certainly close to panic attacks a few times. I would get high heart rates, you know, stiff jaw. I was getting the fight or flight fear instinct all too often because I was allowing things to get in my head and worry about things I couldn't affect. Whereas now, through the work of the likes of yesterday's guest, Athena Actopus, and Stefan Sagmeister through Now Is Better and Athena's A Field Guide to the Apocalypse, I've reached a far more optimistic baseline where I see the value of creativity, and that is what I have been doing, because we wouldn't be on this planet if it wasn't for creativity. You know, we had to adapt to learn how to make clothes, to survive harsh weather conditions, to hunt. So many things required our creativity to survive and remain on this planet as a human species. So the fact that people think they're not creative because they can't draw is preposterous to me, and that's why I'm trying to bang this drum all of the time. And what I thought would be valuable today would be to take you through this process of publishing an independent book. Now, I did an episode a little while ago where I compared my experience of the traditional book publishing process and then compared it to the independent process. But now I have much more experience having done this properly with a big non-fiction release. So let's jump into that. That's what I'm going to do. Thank you to the founding sponsor of the show, IllustrationX.com. You can go and take a look at their wonderful array of international illustration and animation portfolios now, IllustrationX.com. They helped me get this journey underway when it was Harry Lyon Smith, as I've said many times now on this show, who backed me. He said, "Look, you're always talking about creativity. We will sponsor you if you learn how to do it, and we'll get it off the ground." And that was such faith and such trust in someone with no broadcasting experience whatsoever. And it's been a wonderful ride since. This is now the 8th year of The Creative Condition, used to be known as Arrest All Mimics. The book is out today. So what was so let's start. Where do we start? I think we start in 2017 when I wanted to start writing this book. Now, I hadn't written anything since 2014 or 15 when I finished Champagne and Wax Crayons. No, about 2013 actually, because the whole process of getting that published took a little while through Lid Publishing, who published my first book in London, good little boutique publisher. After that, I thought, well, that was arduous. I don't know if I'm going to come back to doing that again. So I've worked on fiction stuff. I've put zines out there, but never anything as heavyweight as Champagne and Wax Crayons was, as in a proper book, a proper full manuscript. That was about 65,000 words. And then I was in love with the studio space I was in London. I was a part of Second Floor Studios and Arts down by the Thames Barrier at the time, in a shared unit of about 300 people. And through this adventure, where having moved down to London from Manchester and fallen in love with the buzz and the energy of the city, I was so observant of creativity, and I had started to interview people and explore this idea of artistic expression and creative belonging through a voluntary campaign that I did on behalf of CALM, which was the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a suicide prevention charity focusing predominantly on guys, because it's hard being a bloke. You know, there's something about it's harder for a lot of men because of the culturally embedded stiff upper lip, particularly here in the UK, that stops us from talking about things and opening up and being a part of a community where we can share our feelings. And I found that really sad. So through that and the lack of budget, I started to interview people about their experience of creativity and their artistic expression and what it did for them on an emotional level. And truly, that ride has just not stopped ever since. And we are now into the 11th year, because that was 2013. And come 2017, when I'm in a wonderful shared environment and I'm also appreciating the love of all those people and just interested in what people are doing, I thought, there's something in this. I'm going to start writing it. I knew that it was going to be called something along the lines of The Creative Condition. I didn't quite have it down at the time, but I started to write a manuscript. And I got 50,000 words into it, which is just under half of what it's ended up being, which is about 115,000 words. And I got about 6 months down the tracks, 50,000 words, kind of liked what I did, and then literally one day on a train back down from Manchester to London, the arse fell out of my confidence. And I mean, my confidence was up and away and out the train window and didn't come back. I shut my laptop, it was literally in a moment, it completely crashed. I felt like, what am I doing? This is silly, this is pointless, there's no worth in this book, I'm going to close this laptop and maybe I'll come back to it next week. And a week goes by and I don't come back to it. And a month goes by and I don't come back to it. And 5 years later, standing at my sink, I think it was Christmas 2022, washing up, bam, in the back of my mind, I'm ready, I'm here, this is the creative condition, and this is what you need to write. It was literally that instantaneous. And if you read this book, you will learn about the way the unconscious works, how these big ideas present themselves as out of thin air when it really isn't the case. It's just that we need to live enough life to let that just stay. We need to give our conscious mind enough downtime so that the unconscious can function, so get off our screens a little bit and let the mind have some quiet, stare at a wall, stand in the shower, whatever that looks like for you, and allow that to come through. And that's what happened. And I couldn't believe this, because I'd read authors like Haruki Murakami and Stephen King talking about how, you know, they had their own analogies for how that would work, how the unconscious would just pick up a thread and run with it and write the thing for you as if someone else were, you know, had possessed your body and done this. I couldn't believe it. So when that happened, I said to my wife at the time, I think I know what the book needs to be now, The Creative Condition. And ironically enough, I said, I think it needs to be a really short, really snappy essay on creativity, on the, you know, the actual contributions to what creativity is. Brilliant. She said, go ahead and do it. So I sat down, and it was anything but short. Like I said, 115,000 word tome. Now sits at the side of me in paperback, and I've done it independently. So when I arrived in 2022, after 5 years of interviewing people, of talking to everybody from rock stars to firefighters to designers to artists to psychologists to sensitivity experts to ex-convicts, I think I fertilized my imagination with enough nutrients so that my unconscious eventually went, here's the book, here's what it looks like. And it just didn't stop. I sat down and I wrote this thing. I did it in the daytime when I probably should have been marketing to illustration clients. I did do some of that, so not to freak out my agent and sponsor too much, but I'm still paying my bills of illustration and still doing that stuff. But I had to bet on myself, because there was a constant shadow of guilt on my shoulder, because I was doing this podcast and writing that book, which in total took up a good chunk of my week. Maybe it was even the majority of my week some weeks. But there was no upfront gains for this, apart from a little bit of sponsorship, which merely covers the costs of, you know, hosting and production and all that stuff, and buying microphones and the like. So I don't see any of that money as a form of income. I've got a mortgage right behind me in that house, outside my garden studio. I have two young children. I have 2 4-year-olds, twins. So there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of need. There's a lot of pressure on me to bring the lion's share of income for our family. My wife, Laura, contributes, of course, and she does so brilliantly through her graphic design. But I have taken the role of, I have to bring home, you know, 70% of our family income. And there's pressure there. And there's guilt that makes me think that I should always be actively marketing my illustration, which pays my bills. But I have a real value. I place a real value on my emotional creativity. And my emotional creativity was increasingly leading me towards this cause of creativity. So I started to write that book. I would spend 2 to 3 hours usually. I would start my day while I had a fresh brain in the morning at 9 o'clock and write till about lunchtime. And then I would go and do all my illustration duties. I did this over the period of 2 years. Some weeks I worked every evening writing on the book too. So in terms of hours, I was probably putting somewhere in the region of 25 into this book on an average week, as well as having to find that time again for my illustration work, when that probably should have been 40. But luckily my representative understands the value of us all being artists and having to express ourselves and do that stuff to stay energized in the illustration world. So that's what I did. I worked on Microsoft Word. I write, and this is a personal choice, but I write in a style where I like to spew it all out. Let my unconscious just vomit all this stuff down on paper. I would stop and I would hit a certain point where I needed somebody else to bring in their perspective to better tell the story of a certain aspect of the story of creativity. So I would then go to my podcast archive, or I would go on pop science websites or psychology papers and academic websites and find the right excerpt or interview to support what I was saying. Now, this is a book with 65 guest interviews in it, plus a load of other references from websites and blogs and projects, because this isn't about Ben Talon anymore. It's led by Ben Talon's voice, but this is about human creativity, so it had to have a lot more perspectives than just little old me. So that's what I did, 25 hours a week, bang, 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 2 years of writing. It finally got to a point in, I think, about January of this year, where I felt like I had something I could call a draft manuscript. And it came in at about 120,000 words. That's when I went to my editor on Champagne and Wax Crayons, David Woods Hale, who has been an absolute joy to work with, and I commissioned David. I'm not going to give you the exact numbers because that would be an invasion of his privacy, but it was enough. What I will do at the end, I'll give you the total sum that I've spent on this project, and I'll give you a rough breakdown of that, okay, rather than giving you a figure. But I had to dig into my own savings and commission David to edit this thing because I wanted him invested. David, being a friend, probably would have turned around and given me as cheap a deal as I would have, you know, wanted if I'd have been really skint. But I had some savings. I trusted myself in this instance that this book was going to pay off in the long run in terms of opening doors for workshops and consultation about creativity and lectures for agencies and businesses and schools and prisons and everything else, which is a part of my plan now moving forward, as well as this podcast. So it I'm not going to lie, it was a blow to part with a chunk of my savings, which was probably about 20% of my life savings, you know, I spent on editing this book. I was more than happy to do so because there's no way that I'm going to independently produce a book and have it out there as anything less quality-wise than anything on Waterstones shelves or, you know, Barnes & Noble if you're in the States. I just wasn't going to do it. It had to be professional. It was part of my thinking. And here was my thinking in terms of independent production. So I knew that I wanted to do this independent, and here's why. My wife is a graphic designer. I could commission her to typeset the book and to lay it out and help me design everything there and set it up for print. That is one of the services that a publisher will provide. As I mentioned before, good friend David Woods Hale is my editor to this day, works on all the fiction stuff with me in collaboration. He's a great editor, and the rate that he gave me was just about affordable, even though it was a massive gamble on my part. So here are two major components that a publisher would provide. And because of that, I made the decision to do it on my own. Because with a publisher, I was only seeing £1 out of a £13 cover price for Champagne and Wax Crayons. When you start to tally up that, including discounts for deals on Amazon and things like that that are out of your control, it really wasn't bringing me in much income. It probably brought me in about 300 quid a year, apart from the odd good year where I got, you know, a translation deal in Japan and I got an advance on that. So we had a couple of much better years than that. But really, you have to be selling tens of thousands of units with a traditional deal to see a worthwhile amount of money coming back for that project. And, you know, to promote Champagne and Wax Crayons, I had to spend a lot of time travelling, going to universities to do talks where I would have to give up a whole day for like 200 quid fee plus, including travel. So to get to the end of a year of doing all of that and taking time away from my day job of illustration, there wasn't much in the way of a financial reward. And I needed to see a bit more return on this one if I was going to put that sort of time and effort into it again, which is why I chose independent. I also knew through my studying of Mark Dawson's courses, who does the self-publishing formula. He also does a brilliant show called The Self-Publishing Show, which is worth a look if you're thinking about independent publishing. I knew through all of that stuff that the world of independent publishing had advanced so much, and there were so many more tools now to market. So that was another big plus. I knew that I would be relinquishing the luxury of not having to spend the time doing all of this stuff and the money that a publisher would bring. But I wanted to get to the end of this journey and have this book in hand and know that when I sold it, I was going to be seeing a few more quid that would justify me spending time away from my family, being out there on the road, being out there at universities, schools and businesses. And, you know, this is my cause. And I have to eventually start seeing some monetary gain because I am spending what's probably about 50% of my week on this now. And I really aren't seeing anything in return for that, so I have to start turning the tide. Part of the reason I wanted to do a bit of a less is more with an independent book. So I wrote the thing. I got it done. I started the editing process with David Woods Hale. I commissioned Laura, my wife, to typeset the book and design it and paid her fairly. Now, this is where Kickstarter comes in, because in reality, I knew that the minimum I was going to need to publish this independent book to get it printed and do a credible first run was £10,000. In the end, I needed closer to £15,000 because I'd paid for the editing out of my own pocket. I paid for most of the design out of my own pocket. I was able to take the fee from a mate's rates deal from my own wife up to a more fair industry standard fee once I you know, got the money from the Kickstarter. This was part of the stipulated reason I wanted to do crowdfunding in the first place. So through the Kickstarter, that money was going to be for me to print, package and post 800 copies. 300 of which went out to the Kickstarter backers, whether that was a bundle deal on Champagne and Wax Crayons and the Creative Condition, or the paperback books to, you know, to manufacture them, because that isn't cheap. I think the print run cost me about £3,000 for the 800 copies, because I wanted to make sure that this was FSC and done ethically. You know, like I said, I can't be putting out episodes talking about the environment and the climate crisis and then turn around and just go and get the books printed in a country where there's more dubious ethics in that regard. I had them printed in the UK with a company called Clays. Now, Clays, they deal with independents as well as the likes of Penguin. It was a little Greta Thunberg book that I bought on the shelf on a whimsical purchase in Waterstones, and I loved the production on that. I loved the feel of the cover. I loved the paper type, and I wondered how much that would cost and who would do it. And on the, you know, on the credits in the book, it was Clays. Now, Clays do FSC certified paper. You know, I could do it in a way where I package it only in recyclable materials and send those out and buy recycled envelopes, which is what I'm trying to do at every step of this process. So that cost me a little more, because it does. Right now, where we are, it costs a little more to do these ethically. Okay, it's always been the conundrum, something I won't compromise on. So that was the thinking there. So all in, like I say, about £15,000 is spent on this thing. Now, when the Kickstarter comes in, something to be aware of if you also go down a crowdfunding route is that you have to pay income tax on that, because it's classed as income. So straight away, you're giving away, you know, 25% of this thing to the tax man, which is a little harsh. So you have to kind of look for a fee that is going to take into account the tax. But after that, essentially what I was funding was a tiny little bit of the design, a few hundred quid, but then a print run through Clays and the postage, the packaging, the income tax, the Kickstarter fee, which is 5%. So, you know, out of 10,000, I think that's what, I went for 9,000, I got 10,000. I slightly overfunded thanks to the generosity of my network. And I gave away, you know, 25% of that plus 5%. So 5% being, what's that, 10%, that's about 500 quid, you know, right off the bat. So these are no small figures. And once you start whittling all that down, it doesn't leave you all that much left over, you know? So that was where I was at. I wanted to go to Kickstarter and raise the money to get it done professionally like a publisher would do. And that's what I've done. Now, you know, once you have the book in hand, you have to think about distribution. So that's on to the next thing. Do I commit to just doing this through bentallenwriter.com and sending them out personalised? That's an option. You can order your signed copy on there right now. It costs 17 quid. I had to think about pricing the book in a way that would, you know, enable me to go and sell it in bookshops who will take 50%, festivals who will take 50%, and still come away with a decent enough profit to justify spending the time and preparation going to do these kind of events. You know, that was a must for me, because that was a harsh lesson learned from the first one, was that for the sake of a pound a book, it really didn't feel all that worthwhile. The cause was there and I loved the book. And at first I loved all the running about doing all that stuff. But after a while, when you see a check coming for 220 quid and you spent 50% of your working year on this thing, you kind of go, oh my God, really? And then you realise just how harsh the traditional publishing model is. And that's not saying I wouldn't go back to it. I absolutely would in the future if the right publisher came to me and went, we can sell tens of thousands of books, we can do it ethically, we can do it on your terms, here's a deal. And I would consider that, I'm not stupid. But really, I wanted to see how this thing would go in an independent model. So distribution. Right now, I've signed up for the Amazon Advantage program. So if you're just doing electronic, like audiobook and digital ebooks, you can use KDP, which is Kindle Direct Publishing, where you can upload it for 70% royalties. You can be Amazon exclusive, or you can do it on also Apple Books and Google Play and all that kind of platform stuff. But in my case, I wanted to produce and print and oversee all the design and the printing of these books myself. I didn't want to use their print-on-demand service because I wasn't sure about the ethics of the Amazon model, you know, FSC and all that stuff, and how many they were going to be getting done and how many would go to waste. So I did it myself. That left me in a position where I had to choose either Amazon Advantage Program or Amazon Seller Central. Now, Amazon Seller Central is where you can go if you've just got a pile of books done by other people and sell them as products. So it would come up as a third-party site. Didn't want that. I wanted this to be a proper shop front. So I've signed up for that Amazon Advantage Program. Now, what you have to start thinking about here is they place orders for multiple different fulfillment center warehouses. So I will get an order that comes in, they buy the books at 40% of my cover price. So $16.99, I'm getting about $6.95 per copy. Amazon buy them direct, so that's a sale. Then they can sell them at whatever price they want. They can sell them at $16.99, or they could go, no, this is on offer at $9.99, $12.99, $14.99, whatever. Out of my hands, but I don't suffer because of it. I still get my cover price of $6.95 through Amazon. And what I get in return for that is they dispatch, package, and fulfill the entire order process. I'm currently having a problem, as I mentioned at the top of the show, because I must have done something wrong, because the boxes are, one's coming back to me from the post office. They couldn't deliver it to the address. It's like, what's going on? I'm in a stressful situation at the moment, trying to work out what's going on with that. That notwithstanding, if it all goes smooth and we work it out, I'm going to be on Amazon and I'm going to be able to reach an audience through their advertising and through their algorithms that will enable me to sell to more people worldwide than I would otherwise be able to do if I'm just tucked away on bentallenwriter.com. Bentallenwriter.com is for people who are in my network on social media who want to support me directly and want a signed copy, something a bit more personal. So that's cool. Hopefully there I'm covering both bases. I just talked to Radim Malenich, who's coming back to the show soon, who's got Creativity for Sale and The Mindful Creative. We were both doing book signings at Off Festival just this week. And Radim is, you know, steps ahead of me. He's been doing this many more years. He's learned the whole process. He's now managed to get himself wholesale representation. Now, that's on another level. So when you have a wholesaler, that's where all the major bookstores will order from. Waterstones will go straight to wholesalers like Gardeners, for example, who they will place a big order. They'll place a bulk order. The wholesaler will do it. Radim doesn't even have to touch it. All Radim has to do is get the books printed and have the pallet sent to his wholesale warehouse. They will take care of everything else, all the other orders. Obviously, you will give away even more percentage then, because Amazon then go to the wholesaler and everything else. So you will give away a higher percentage, but you don't have to get your hands dirty. You don't have to be carrying boxes down the post office like I do and worrying about why they're getting rejected. So he's down the road. So there's even more to think about if you can get wholesale representation. But all of this you have to manage as the independent publisher. This is why you retain more money. So do you see where this is going? There's a lot to think about in terms of the time you're going to be spending doing all of this stuff. Now, if you can do what Radim's doing and implement a model where you have the entire model catered for, so you've got your printer, you've got your designer, in this case Radim, because he's making his own books, you've got your writer, in this case Radim, but he has got everything else handled by somebody else. So he's got a team, much like a publisher would do, but he's keeping a greater percentage than what he would get through a publisher. These are all things to think about. It's not easy to get a wholesaler. Not anyone can walk in with a book where they've got 100 copies printed and go, I'd like wholesale representation, please. They'll go, no, it's not worth it. It's not going to be enough copies. Not going to be enough demand. See you later. At which point you have to work out how you're going to get those books out to the world. Now, advertising and self-promotion, how are you doing that? In my case, I'm beginning with a model that involves me plugging into other people's events and doing things. So I spoke to you in the last episode about my experience at Off Festival, where I got in touch. I was doing a live podcast with Stefan Sagmeister on the main stage, which was exciting. But then the guy said, are you up for doing a book signing? Awesome. Yes, tailor-made audience. So I sent 30 copies. You know, this is a new book. I don't have the same draw as Radim or Stefan at this stage. I am very much underneath them in the hierarchy. I'm at peace with that. I'm new to this world. So I sent 30 copies of the book. Last I heard, and it was with about 4 hours of the festival to go on the Saturday, I'd sold 26 out of 30. I'm a happy man. That's brilliant. That means I don't have to bring a full suitcase of books back to the UK with my tail between my legs. I gave 50% away to Off Festival, which is absolutely fine because they have the people selling the books, they take the payment, they have the stage to get those books sold to the right audience. What a wonderful thing. Then, coming back, I'm doing a book launch in Manchester at Yes Bar, where I'm going to be taking a couple of boxes of books, setting up a table, I booked a DJ, we're having a big launch event, and maybe some books will sell there. Then it's on to University of South Wales, where I'm doing a talk for the students in Cardiff, where I'm going to be taking my little payment gizmo. But I'm going to have to get the books there. I'm going to either have to post them, take them on the train, or drive them to the university, sell them, and if they don't sell, bring them back. This is what you have to think about. So distributing my own product, promoting my own product. I'm getting out on the road. I'm getting involved in creative institutions and events to make sure that I'm keeping the thing alive. I'm also building a press database where I'm going to be pitching myself to podcasts and YouTube channels to go and talk about the book and do all the self-promotion. If you were in a traditional book deal, you would still have to do all of this. You would have a representative who did a press release, but that's just about where it ends. It's then up to you to go forth and conquer in the world and get yourself opinion articles, get yourself interviews. You know what I mean? You have to think about all of this promotion stuff, regardless of whether you are independently published or traditionally published. So where I find you today, that's where I am. I have things booked in coming up. I'm excited. Orders are starting to come through my website. I am now on Amazon, even if it is just the 3 books that have been accepted so far. Hopefully it's going to be a lot more because I've received a decent amount of orders, except we're having some teething problems getting them packaged and distributed in the right way to make sure that they actually go into the fulfillment centres. You might be listening to this and thinking, screw that, that's a lot of work, that's a lot of time. And you would be right, because it is. And it can be costly, you know. Where's the money coming from up front to pay for all this packaging, to take time out of your day job to go and do all the distribution? I'm lucky that I'm a freelance illustrator and I get downtime around my commissions to go to the post office, to walk the dog at the same time, to do the nursery run and still drop the books off, you know? But a lot of people aren't going to have the time that I have to do that. So if that's you and you're busy working 60 hours a week in your day job and you've got a family and you think, where am I finding the time to do any of that? Then without doubt, the best route for you is a traditional publisher. And that's why they take on all of those tasks. And then you can just concentrate on doing the press. So maybe you can take your lunch break. I remember interviewing Kimberly Wilson back on episode 202 of the Creative Condition podcast about the brain and mental health and diet. Now, Kimberly is a psychologist. She has her own practice. She works, you know, she works big hours like the rest of us. But Kimberly took some time out on her work's lunch to come and sit in a little meeting room and interview me over Zoom. So there are ways to do it, but these are all things you should be considering when you think about whether the traditional or the independent model is right for you. Then there's storage. So in Radim's case, he's getting print runs done of about 5,000 and sending them straight to his wholesaler because they know there's demand for that. I got a run of 800, which was one big pallet that turned up on my road. It's still in my front room and in my loft. I'm kind of at capacity with 800. So realistically speaking, when they sell, I'm going to be capped at, you know, getting another 800 done, unless I think about storage, self-storage, fulfillment program, wholesale. Maybe I'll go there. If the demand is there for the book, I very much will have to, because I don't have a massive house. I have a little garden studio, but again, that's already pretty tight. So again, another thing to think about, storage and stocking the books and keeping them safe. Then there's returns. So one of the books went out to a guy. He sent me a picture saying, thank you for sending the book through the Kickstarter. Delighted to receive it. However, is there any chance you could send me another one? Because this. And he sent me a picture, and I'm not joking, it looks like a Staffordshire Bull Terrier's taken a bite out of the corner of the thing. I don't know what Royal Mail have done to that one, but somebody kicked the living shit out of it. And I'm going, oh my God. So straight away, I'm having to send out £17 worth of products as a replacement. So you have to deal with refunds and returns and all that stuff. Again, unless you've got wholesale representation. So things to think about, you know. This stuff was fine when I was doing like a limited run of 100 little zines, because you send out 100 things, you can put them in a board-backed envelope. Chances are they're not going to get lost or damaged. And if one does, we're talking about something that cost me maybe £2 to print and I'm selling for about £8. So it's fine. The margins justify the time that I would have to spend doing that. However, now I'm taking the role on of a publisher. That's the top and bottom of it. Next up is recording the audiobook. So not only did I have to write the book, get it edited, implement all the changes. And all this would take time because I would have to go back through a 120,000 word manuscript with a fine tooth comb and correct all of my editor's changes. I would pick up on typos that I'd spotted myself and deal with all that. Then I have to subscribe and pay for a program called Vellum, which is, it's actually really quite generous. I paid about £200 lifetime subscription, and it enables you to make ebooks in a very intelligent piece of software where you dump in the Microsoft Word document and it breaks down the chapters, and then you tidy it up, you format the chapters, you add all the credits, the foreword, the dedication, they're also by this author, an author bio, all of that stuff, social media links, so that you, at the end of it, you can generate a fully finished ebook that you can then upload to Amazon Kindle, Apple Books, Google Play, Barnes and Noble. I think their platform's called Nook. What else was there? Rattican. You know, there's all these different ebook providers, but you have to think about that, the production of an ebook. Do you know how to do it? If not, how much time is it going to take you to learn and watch all the tutorials? Then there's audiobook. Do you have an audio space that is sufficient quality to record an audiobook? I'm hoping the answer is yes, because I've invested in these sound absorption panels that I'm sat between right now talking to you guys on a half decent microphone, and GarageBand and knowledge of how to produce and edit a podcast, so I can produce and edit my own audiobook. I hope I can do it in studio. Otherwise, you are going to be looking at a few £1,000s to get that properly produced. Who's going to narrate the audiobook? In my case, I'm cornered. I'm a podcaster. People listen to this show and buy that book. They want to hear me reading that book to them. They don't want some random person from another county with a different accent or an American voice. Now, don't get me wrong, you can also automate your voice now through AI. So that's one option. Not going to do that because I really enjoy the process of narration. I love doing this podcast. I know that Radim commissioned a guy in Birmingham to narrate his book. Again, brilliant outsourcing, very smart move, so that Radim can keep doing his design work and his illustration and whatever else, and spending his time promoting the book. So all things to think about. Three formats to hit there. You don't have to do an audio book, but for me, I work in an industry where a lot of you guys, much like me, are audiophiles. We listen to podcasts while we work, we listen to audiobooks while we work or we walk the dog. And the top and bottom of it is we're a visual audience, so some of us don't particularly love wordy books. There was one lady at Off Festival who came over and she was kind of looking at the book, reading the blurb, asking me a few questions. And ultimately she went, "I'm really sorry, but it's too wordy for me." And people were going and buying Stefan's book for that reason, because it was a visual book. So there's that thing to think about too. What's the balance of illustration and design? Do you have the skills to do that yourself? If not, think about the cost of commissioning an illustrator or a designer, because you've got to pay people fairly, you know? So there's a lot of things to think about, and I hope I'm covering the most of them doing this. There's also admin. I historically have been a bit of a shambles. My desktop is usually littered with thumbnails and everything else, so I struggle with staying organized. So this time I had to really get my shit together. I had to get a cohesive database for the Kickstarter. Who was I posting things out to and when? Because when they came back and said that a dog's chewed their book up, I have to work out when I sent it so I can apply for compensation at the post office. I have to keep databases of press lists for podcasts, for design blogs, for distribution, you know. So I have to keep a spreadsheet for my income, my expenses for postage and packaging the book, printing costs. I have to make sure that I'm putting enough money away from all the sales to get another run done. I don't want to get to the end of the 800, realize I have to pay another few grand to get them printed again, and I've not used the money wisely and I don't have that money. So, you know, getting organized, it all takes time. It's all record keeping. How well suited are you to that? Or would a traditional publisher be better doing that? It's pretty crazy stuff, you know? I had to invest in little ring lights for lighting my face when I'm talking on video, because suddenly I'm getting interest from YouTube channels about creativity and illustration. I can't be sat in the dark like I often was when I'm sat in the corner of my studio doing the podcast. Suddenly this is video as well, so I had to pay for a couple of Ring LED lights. All little costs on top, you know. If you want to do a podcast to promote the book as well, which is what Radim's done, who's hosting that and how much are you paying for it? Again, all considerations, all costs. Let me think of anything that I might have missed within all that. Oh, so here's another one. In the end, David Woods Hale, my editor, very kindly offered to proofread the book. In an ideal world, I wanted to have two proofreaders. I also worked with a guy called Dan Lockwood on some of my fiction as a kind of a second layer of copy editing, just to weed out the, you know, anything else that David didn't catch. I couldn't afford that. My budget from Kickstarter ran out in the end and I didn't have the money to pay Dan, and I really wanted to. And I've since found a few typos that I'm pretty sure Dan would have nipped in the bud, where I'm like, So I knew what I had to relinquish, but I had to compromise somewhere because I didn't have all the money to spend thousands and thousands on this thing. So that's what happened. But again, do you know what the rounds of editing look like? You have a developmental editor. You have a structure editor. Some people have a line editor. That's somebody who reads meticulously every single line to make sure that it's perfect. Then there's a copy editor. There's a proofreader. You know, there's so much to consider that a publisher will provide, which is why you get the low royalties through a publishing deal. So again, do you have the energy to do that, the desire to do it? Are you just going to buckle under it and not do it? Because if you do and you do it independently, the book's not going to fly. It's as simple as that. Oh, so there's a lot to consider. Of course, video trailers. You know, are you comfortable doing interviews? Do you like doing spoken and video interviews? Can you write if you want to write a tips piece for a certain thing? Do you have enough to bring? It's all things to consider. You know, the travel, again, I don't really have the flexibility to travel far and wide all of the time. I would love to go to every design festival in the world and every creative festival like Off. However, I made the decision to have a young family, and I don't want to be away from them. I miss them incredibly at Off Festival. It was kind of horrible. You know, the festival was wonderful, and I had a time of my life. But at the same time, my heart was bleeding for my young kids and my wife because I'm a little dog. So, I'm a home bird in that regard. So how much time do you want to spend on the road promoting this thing and going around doing the talks? I can do that. I'm lucky that I'm close to London, so I can do that relatively local and still be back to do the nursery run and all that stuff. But if you can and you have to travel for all of this, you know, are you going to have to do it all remotely? If you're going to do it remotely, have you got a Zoom subscription so you can talk for more than 40 minutes? Have you got hosting for a podcast? You know, there's a lot of cost involved that you don't always think about. So that's worth looking at. And then what's the onward life of the book? Are you going to do subsequent edits? Is that going to change the spine width for the design? Who's going to change that design? Who's going to edit the next incarnation, and how much is that going to cost? You know, I'm working it all out to a degree as I go, and I'm actually quite enjoying the process at the moment. It's very fulfilling in the same way that, you know, getting to the end of the year and knowing that you've made your income from your passion and having spreadsheets and an accountant and all that stuff, that feels good to me, the business bits. It feels like I'm a bit of a grown-up and I've got this actual business. So I do find it quite fulfilling, and I'm looking forward to doing the audiobook, and I love doing these podcasts with you guys. But not everyone's got this kind of view on it all. Not, you know, some people just want to make the work, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And believe me, there are some days, like when the packages came back from Amazon, I was an angry man, and I don't get angry easily. But I said to my wife, she's like, "What's up?" And I'm like, "I want to strangle someone right now because I've just spent 20 quid on sending these boxes to Amazon. They're coming back. They're probably not going to be in the best state. And I have to work out why now, which means I have to sit reading FAQs and tutorials and their vendor manual, which is extensive. And it's like, oh, this is, you know, sometimes you go, I just want to go and draw or write. So where do you fall in that regard? But I think that probably just about covers it in terms of giving you an insight to this process. All in all, spent about 15 grand. 10 grand of that was raised through Kickstarter. But after tax, probably talking about 7,500 quid Kickstarter, which has really only covered the 800 print run, postage, packaging. You know, there's a little bit left in the pot for like a bit more packaging when I need it, because I need bigger boxes to get these consignments out. But really, that's accounted for everything. So where's all that coming from? You know, it's not a small amount of money, 15 grand, but that is money that a decent publisher will put in, and they will pay you in advance. So do consider the traditional route if everything I'm talking to you about today sounds ridiculous, because I can understand why it would sound ridiculous. Trust me, yesterday it felt ridiculous. But that's everything. The Creative Condition is out today. Let me read you a blurb. I have got a copy right here behind me in the studio. So here's the blurb for The Creative Condition. This is 10 years of work. This is 2 years of writing. It's 115,000 words. I like to think it's good. The feedback has been really positive so far. I would love it if you could leave a review if you bought the book already on Goodreads or Amazon or whatever your preferred platform is. Here it is. Without creativity, the human race could not have survived this long. Despite astounding technological advances in the 21st century, we continue to misunderstand and undervalue creativity's vital role in our education, societies, cultures, and industries. What is creativity? How do we understand it and embrace our own creativity to lead more fulfilling lives, revolutionize industries, and solve our problems? Ben Talon has spent his 16-year career exploring the many facets of creativity, having illustrated for the New York Times, The Guardian, UNICEF and the Premier League since 2008, and hosting the weekly The Creative Condition podcast since 2016. Through a series of case studies, stories, personal experiences and a broad range of interviews with leading voices in the creative industry, as well as those practicing creativity far beyond, he presents a powerful, entertaining, expansive and insightful biography of one of humanity's greatest gifts. Packed with the voices of neuroscientists, firefighters, reformed criminals, Olympic gold medal winners, teachers, artists, rock stars, psychologists, sensitivity experts and more, The Creative Condition invites you to reflect on the significance of creativity in your life and its role in shaping the broader human experience. So if you like the sound of that, it is out right now. You can get it at bentalanwriter.com/shop or on Kindle if you're an ebook reader. There is going to be an audiobook coming up soon. That's cool if you want to wait for that. Get in touch with any questions. Thank you for listening, guys. Big thank you to the founding supporter of the show, illustrationx.com. Check out their global range of illustration and animation portfolios now. Be sure to check out the Ukrainian Institute, supporting Ukrainian creativity by connecting them with the rest of the world. They need it. They're in a horrible war. You can check them out at ui.org.ua, where you can find out all about their cause. Please do consider supporting them. Thank you for listening today, guys. Any questions off the back of this independent book publishing process, I'm happy to answer. Get in touch, hello@bentalan.com, or hit me up on social media on LinkedIn or Instagram @BenTalan. It's been a pleasure. Cheers, guys. I hope to see you soon and hope to chat to you about the book. If you want to join me at the Manchester book launch next week, I'm having it at Yes Bar on Thursday, the 18th of April from 6 p.m. until 10 p.m. There is a free ticket link. If you'd like to come along, have a beer, have a slice of pizza, listen to Dirty Freud DJ set, and even come and grab a copy from me direct and have a natter, please do. I'd love to see you there. Get in touch. I'll send you the ticket link. Nice one, guys. Thank you for listening. Take care.